Good morning again.
Good morning again.
Can you guys hear me in the back? I'm very short and I'm standing on a box and I have to lean forward so you can hear me, but that's okay. The goddess loves even short people. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about why I am up here this morning. I went on this goddess pilgrimage. The goddess pilgrimage is run by a woman by the name, actually she is a theologian and I call her an anthropologist as well, by the name of Carol Christ. And you go to study Minoan culture, but in the context of a matriarchal society. And you might wonder how I got to go on this trip. Well, it all starts with Captain Marvel. Anybody heard of Captain Marvel? Now, a few years ago, I needed to start doing some more exercise. And I don't know about you, but I am not good with that. And in order for me to be consistent about my exercise, I actually got a walking buddy. Because if I have someone to meet, I'll actually show up. Has anybody had that experience? So we've been walking for quite a while now, and she grew up as a big comic book fan. I was not familiar with comic books at all. And she mentioned to me that the Captain Marvel movie was coming out, and would I be interested in going to see the movie with her? I said, sure, I don't know much about it, but I'd love, you know, to learn about that. And so the advertisements started coming out for Captain Marvel. And I would see the advertisements initially, and I would think, who's that woman? And where's Captain Marvel? Do you see a problem there? Yeah. Feminist me. I automatically assumed that Captain Marvel had to be a man. It didn't enter my mind that it would be a woman. And so finally, when it dawned on me, I took it as a call to really examine my beliefs and my assumptions. And I'm not alone. We do that in all kinds of situations and in all kinds of things. We assume based on what we know, based on what we've been taught. And I have been raised in a dominant society where one thing is always dominant over the other. And typically, the ideal within this culture is often that those with power are male. So in my mind, well, Captain Marvel was a man. Just around the same time, I got the opportunity to go on this goddess pilgrimage. My friends and I had been talking about it for years, but it just so happened that the days I picked back in February for my vacation coincided with the exact dates of this pilgrimage, which I call destiny. Some of you may call it other things, which is fine. That's why we're Unitarians. And for me, my spiritual path, and I deeply believe that this was a spiritual issue. What were my assumptions about things and people? I believe that to be a very deeply spiritual thing. And my spiritual path has never been linear. It's always been like a labyrinth in ever-decreasing cycles to get to source. And the funny thing is, when you go to Greece or Crete, if any of you have ever been there, you know you'll see on jewelry, walls, t-shirts, anywhere you go, there are always these cycles. It's like a little ever-expanding circle. And in Greek culture, that represents the eternal cycle of life. So it was appropriate that I should go and continue to work on my ever-increasing understanding of what it is to be female and what it is to think about people who are female. And so me and my friend, Reverend Beverly Dale, who'd been talking about it forever, we got on a plane and we head to Crete and we get there. The first night that we're there, is a dinner to meet and greet, essentially. We meet all of our traveling companions, and we meet our host, Carol Christ, who will take us all over the island of Crete to ancient Minoan worship sites, palaces, homes, all kinds of places. Let me just tell you, I was never a hiker before. I am a hiker now. I'd never been in a cave before. I have been in multiple caves. I certainly didn't expect the trip to be as grueling as it was, but it was absolutely worth it. And so on the very first night, we meet, and she does an exercise with everyone. And she says, she gives you a bag, and she says, stick your hand in the bag and pull out a stone. On the stone will be an image of the goddess. And whatever that stone, whatever that image is for you. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm in Greece. Let me play along. I'll pull the stone out. Well, I pull the stone out, and guess what goddess I get? You would think so. I actually got an image of the goddess Kali, which had been a recurring energy in my life for decades. So then I thought, wow, well, okay, I was expecting maybe Athena, Aphrodite, something Greek. This goddess is pretty diverse. But in addition to that, it was confirmation for me that this is where I needed to be. And so we started our trip at the Palace of Gnosis, which was excavated by a man by the name of Arthur Evans. But the important thing to know about Minoans is that they were goddess worshippers. I don't know, many of you may have seen the image. It's a woman holding her arms up, and in each hand is a snake. She's fully clothed, except that she is bare-breasted. That was one of the goddesses that they worshipped. And that worship extended mostly to female deities. They couldn't find really a male one. But another important thing about Minoan culture is that they had no standing army. In fact, they couldn't find evidence of an army at all. Not only couldn't they find evidence of an army, they did the most magnificent frescoes. Dolphins, bull jumping, all kinds of things. I mean, just exquisite. But not one depicted a scene of war. And in archaeology, what you don't find is just as important as what you do. In addition to that, Cretan expansion never was done by a domination of any kind. In fact, what they were traders. And it's interesting to note that trade can get you more than war. So basically, they had no military-industrial complex, and they did not profit from war. And the reason for that is that they did not value dominance or violence. They were lovers, not fighters. And the other thing to understand is that Minoan culture was part of a larger culture of what people consider the culture of old Europe, mostly matriarchal societies or societies of peace, as Heidi Guttner Aberroth, I always forget her name, named them. And the thing is, when you start to study these societies, one of the things you realize is how largely ignored and invisible the contribution of women in history has been. Sometimes forcibly made invisible. The primary thing about these societies is that they were primarily shaped by women. One of the theories is that, and I firmly believe that, that women created agriculture. And the ability to be able to stay in a single place to live and eat well is a game changer in human history. It is the basis for every city, town, every settlement that we know. So instead of being a hunter-gatherer, you could actually stay in one place. And what's an interesting side note on this, and while it's not part of the old Europe culture, the first people that Columbus encountered when he crossed the Atlantic were a group called the Taino. They're a subgroup of the Arawaks that lived all through the Caribbean. Their women were specifically known to have amazing agricultural techniques. In addition to that, they were good at dealing with both toxic and poisonous plants so that no one died. They sustained that culture for hundreds of years. The other thing about these societies is that they have a nonviolent social order in which living creatures are respected without exploitation of humans, animals, or nature. They are well-balanced and peaceful societies in which domination is unknown and beings are treated equally. This provides an alternative social and cultural models that promote trust, mutuality, and abundance for all. This is not women rule. It's not matriarchy as the opposite of patriarchy. It's actually a tradition of equality. To negotiate their political decisions, they did it through consensus. Their goal was always to live a peaceful life. They honored mothers and considered care and generosity, values they associated with motherhood, to be the highest values. The hallmark of it is gift-giving. The bottom line of that is they did not allow each other to go without their needs being met. Part of that can be seen even in the Iroquois culture here in our own backyard, where they had councils of female elders who managed the day-to-day work of the clan and the day-to-day life of the clan. And while the Iroquois did occasionally go to war, one of the powers that the female elders had is if the male elder council voted to go to war, they could veto that because their children would ultimately be the ones to pay that price. Those cultures also assert that the highest role for all humans, however identified, is to nurture life. The womb does not discriminate, and they took their lead from the goddess. And once you start talking about the goddess in terms of archaeology and mythology and history, one name comes up, and her name is Maria Gimbutas. I had never heard this woman's name before I entered Crete, but now I love her. Maria Gimbutas was an archaeologist and a theologian. But in addition to that, in her teens, she spent years learning about folklore and mythology. She actually created a new brand of archaeology called archaeomythology, which used archaeology, folklore, ethnology, linguistics, and mythology to cross-check one another. So things that would have been readily dismissed by other archaeologists or thought of as unimportant or ignored or even completely put aside, she was able to find their significance and really tell us a story of these ancient cultures. Joseph Campbell highly praised her. Joseph Campbell compared the importance of Maria Gimbutas' output to the historical importance of the Rosetta Stone in deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphics. Campbell provided a foreword to the new edition of Gimbutas' The Language of the Goddess before he died in 1989. Often he said how profoundly he regretted that her research on Neolithic cultures of Europe had not been available when he was writing The Masks of God. And to put it into the context of Maria Gimbutas, she posited that the primordial deity of the Paleolithic and Neolithic ancestors was female, reflecting the sovereignty of motherhood. In fact, there are no images that have been found of a father god throughout the prehistoric record. Paleolithic and Neolithic symbols and images cluster around a self-generating goddess and her basic functions as giver of life, wielder of death, and as regeneratrix. The multiple categories, functions, and symbols used by prehistoric peoples to express the great mystery are all aspects of an unbroken unity of one deity, a goddess who is ultimately nature herself, a goddess in all her diversity. And one of the things that always comes to mind when I think of this is a Mother Teresa going to Calcutta and setting up her hospice in an old temple of Kali to express all the love and care of the goddess for dying people. And for me, my own spirituality can be paraphrased through the words of Carol Christ and Judith Plasko from their book, Woman Spirit Rising, A Reader in Religion. My spirituality has always been linked to my feminism. Feminism is about challenging unequal power structures and erroneous ideas. So, it always means challenging inequalities in race, class, sexual preference, payment of wages, self-identification, immigration status, and many other things. What we need to be doing is not just changing who holds power, but changing the way we conceive of power. There is the power we're all familiar with, power over. But there is another kind of power, power from within. For a woman, it is the power to be fertile, either in terms of having babies, or writing books, or dancing, or baking bread, or being a great organizer. It is the kind of power that does not deprive someone else. And for me to go further with that, to cultivate and promote this kind of power is to honor and do the work of the goddess. It cultivates in us respect, recognition, connection, and care for one another. It also creates a society of abundance where each of us is free to be our highest and best. Thank you.